Case this morning is file number 821-1269, Wells Fargo Bank Respondents versus Viramont USA LLC et al. As all parties are aware, this is a Zoom oral argument. There will be a recording of this of argument available tomorrow, but all parties, either lawyers arguing in front of us or people watching remotely, are prohibited from engaging in their own recordings. So we appreciate if you would follow that rule. Finally, as appellant is aware, counsel will have 15 minutes for their argument in chief, respondent will have 15 minutes for their argument, and then finally, appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Counsel for the appellant, whenever you are ready, you may begin, but please tell us who you are in a loud, clear voice.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Your Honors and counsel, my name is Peter Crema Jr., C-R-E-M-A, and I'm appearing on behalf of the appellants Viramont USA, LLC, and Mr. Paul Koenig. The facts underlying this appeal are very straightforward, so I'll be brief. The appellants applied for a series of loans with the respondent. They ultimately applied for 3 loans and a credit card. And as is typical in a bank transaction, the banks prepared loan documentation. And the bank's documents say that I signed this set of loan documents, and by signing, I further agree on behalf of to be bound by the customer agreement and the other documents related to the loan. And as is typical, the bank took a security interest in what, in this case, is a 2017 written hour trailer. Now, the loan documents are the very issue central to this appeal, Your Honors. The loan documents provide in part as to loan proceeds and collateral. The loan proceeds of each loan funded to borrower by Wells Fargo shall be used to purchase the items of equipment described in the confirmation letter and acceptable to Wells Fargo, defined as equipment. The borrower shall reimburse for funds expended to enable borrower to acquire rights in the equipment. So what happens is, Wells Fargo is granted a security interest in each item of equipment together with all accessories and components appertaining or attaching thereto, whether now owned by borrower or hereinafter acquired. Loan documents further state that in the event that the description of the equipment described in the confirmation letter does not match the description of the equipment actually purchased in all of then the security interest is in all other equipment together with all accessories and components appertaining or attached thereto, whether now owned by borrower or hereinafter acquired. Sub Romanet 4 of section of C says all rents, issue, income, or profits of the foregoing. What happened here, though, is the confirmation letter relates to a 2017 trailer, and the proceeds were used to purchase that trailer. So what happened is the confirmation letter and the loan documents matched the described equipment. So in this case, you never get down to section C, subsection Romanet 4, allowing for the security interest to attach to basically the rents derived from usage of the trailer.
So, counsel, may I ask you about that? You're saying that it sort of follows that, in other words, you're saying that the foregoing in sub four refers only to, not even, I guess, to sub three. You're saying the foregoing refers only to subdivision two, which is you can have the proceeds under sub four only if the equipment didn't match. And that's only under, and the foregoing must relate to sub two. I guess my question for you is, why would all rents, et cetera, profits and proceeds, why would they apply to the actual equipment issued, but not, excuse me, why would they apply, what's the difference? Why would they apply to sub two and not sub one? If in any event, sub one and sub two are meant to get to what is the actual equipment, either that which was described or that which was in fact, you know, purchased, and sub four gets to the proceeds, why wouldn't the proceeds apply to both of those, such that the foregoing means all of that?
Apologies, Your Honor.
I mean, you understand my question? You're saying it's equipment only if it's the actual described equipment. If it's not the described equipment, it's equipment plus, and that's what four means. And that seems like a kind of a, I don't really understand rationally why there would be a difference between those two, why wouldn't both include the profits, et cetera.
Well, Your Honor, if I'm understanding your question correctly, the bank drafted these documents and it says we get a security interest in the equipment that matches the confirmation letter. It's only if the equipment does not match, then do you get down into, let me read it again. In the event that
we see it in front of us, it doesn't say only if. It says, number one, you get a security interest in the equipment, accessories, and components. Two, if it doesn't match, then you get the actual equipment, accessories, and components. Three says you also get substitutions, therefore. And four says you get rents, issues, income, proceeds, profits of the foregoing. And you're saying you would only get that plus factor under four if you have bought different equipment. If it's the identical equipment, then you're limited just to the equipment. That's what I understand you to be arguing.
Yes, Your Honor, that is. And that's the way these documents read. And I'll give you an example. Let's say you go to Wells Fargo and got a loan to purchase a car. The bank is going to take, obviously, a security interest and record that interest against your car. But under this set of loan documents, if you now become an Uber or a Lyft driver, the bank is entitled to a security interest in all the income you derive from the use of that car. That's not what's intended by this set of loan documents.
What if, using your example, in fact, the person didn't buy the car under number one? Romanet one, but in fact bought a different car under two.
Well, right? Under that scenario, I think Your Honor is correct in that then subsection Romanet four would apply because the confirmation letter, my car does not match what I agreed to buy and what Wells Fargo agreed to fund.
Right. And so then you would get, the bank would get the security interest in both the car and the Uber income.
Yes.
Okay.
But in get there, Your Honor, because the description of the collateral matches. So this is the genuine issue of material fact, Your Honor, and as this court is well aware, when you're dealing with an appeal relating to summary judgment, we're looking at whether there were any genuine issues of material fact and whether the court erred in the application of the law. Now, viewing the evidence in the light most favorable to the appellants, it is clear that the UCC-1 financing statement filed by the respondent in this matter clearly exceeded the scope of the authority it was given to take a security interest by the very loan documents that were prepared and executed in this matter. The district court erred in including that Exhibit C-4 of the loan documents gave respondent a general right to file a UCC-1 in the proceeds of the trailer. This is a genuine issue of material fact that appellants believe the district court got wrong because the respondent has a right to file the UCC-1 only against the trailer and not the proceeds of the trailer, which it actually did in this case. As I stated earlier, Your Honors, there's no dispute that what is described in confirmation letter and in the loan documents and what the loan was utilized for was to purchase the written hour 2017 trailer. Romanet 4 is only triggered if there is a disconnect between the documents. So that is one genuine issue of material fact, Your Honor, that this loan agreement didn't support the UCC-1 financing statement has filed. Koenig noted in his affidavit that he didn't have a present intent to accept or acknowledge these documents, specifically Exhibit C, because he didn't have Exhibit C at the time the loan was granted. Pursuant to MnStat 336.9-509A1, a person may file an initial financing statement only if the debtor authorizes the filing in an authenticated record. Now, in order to be an authenticated record, the record must be signed by the debtor. In this case, it was not. Or a record to which the debtor has with present intent adopted or accepted. Those facts are not present in this case, Your Honors.
So, Counselor, just to be clear then, even if it had been within the scope of filing that was within the scope, you're arguing that it still was not permitted.
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay, there's two
bases here. Koenig noted, as I said, that Exhibit C was provided at a later date, so he couldn't have present intent to adopt that when it was given to him later, not knowing what
it was. Mr. Kramer, do you agree that the customer agreement was all part of the same contract when your clients took out money from the bank or were loaned money by the bank?
Your Honor, I believe all the documents, or excuse me, the operative documents do contain language that says this is part of a loan package, and I believe it does cross-reference that there will be other documents.
So my understanding of Minnesota case law, and I know that in your brief, I'm looking at page 13, where you talk about they didn't agree to sign Exhibit C itself. It wasn't their intention. But if you look at something like the Marso case, Marso versus Mankato Clinic, which says where several instruments are made part of one transaction, they will be read together and each will be construed with reference to the others. You didn't cite any case law for your proposition there. I'm wondering if you have any case law, because my research shows that the case law doesn't support your argument.
Your Honor, I do not have any authority that I can provide to the court this morning on that issue. And I agree, Your Honor, that when you have a series of documents and they say, you know, this document will consist of you know, 10 different documents, I agree that these documents are part of it. But the base issue, I believe, still exists, Your Honor, in that when you have a document that you're not provided till later, you can't say that you're authorizing and acknowledging that document if you don't have it, if you don't know what it says. So we believe that that is a separate genuine issue of material fact, but even if the court disagrees with appellants on that issue, the issue is still a genuine issue of material fact as to exceeding the authority and the scope of what was permitted to be filed. So, Your Honors, we believe in this matter that the district court should be reversed and this matter remanded because respondents violated the UCC-1 or UCC by filing a UCC-1 that was beyond the scope of what was authorized by the very loan documents. The district court, we believe, further committed reversible error by declaring that there were no genuine issues of material fact on the appellant's breach of contract and promissory estoppel claims. There is clearly a breach here, appellants believe, based upon the filing of the overbroad UCC-1 financing statement. So, as noted in his affidavit, Mr. Koenig testified that he was told there wouldn't be a UCC-1 filed. There was. So, Your Honor, promissory estoppel, as the court knows, was there a clear and definite promise? Did the promisor intend reliance on that?
And Mr. Kramer, we have contracts here, and I can't find case law that says that where there are contracts, you get to promissory estoppel.
You are correct, Your Honor. If there is a contract here, which we believe there is, then you look to the plain terms of the contract. If the court were somehow to find out that there is not a contract, that Exhibit C, which was produced to appellants at a later date, then, Your Honor, then the fallback argument is promissory estoppel.
So but let me ask you this, Counsel, you just referred to, and I had a question about this. You're trying to get to a trial on it, talking about that there's a genuine issue of fact about whether the scope is exceeded. But I think whether the scope is exceeded depends entirely on the meaning of this contract, which you said is plain language, unambiguous. Why isn't it up to the court then to determine what the contract means, and then it just follows from that whether it exceeds the scope. Why is there a trial on that issue?
Your Honor, I don't think from the district court's order that it actually addressed the application of sub-Romanet 4 in its opinion. It merely said that there is a general right to file a UCC-1 here. So either the court did not recognize that issue, it did not address that issue, or it merely ignored the issue. I'm not sure, but the order is silent as to the application interpretation of sub-Romanet 4 is my recollection, Your Honor. So in summation, Your Honors, we believe that there are genuine issues of material fact that exist in this case and that it should be reversed and remanded to the district court to allow this matter to proceed to trial. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We'll now hear from counsel for the respondent, please.
Thank you. May it please the court, Your Honors, and opposing counsel. My name is Mary Seeling, appearing on behalf of Wells Fargo Bank. As has been set forth by Your Honors and Mr. Kramer, there are two issues at play on this appeal. One is whether there was an authenticated security agreement, and then two, whether that security agreement and the subsequent UCC financing statement exceeded the scope of the security agreement. It seems to me.
Can I ask, counsel, may I interrupt just to orient myself? And both of those issues go to only, we're only talking about the counterclaims for breach of contract and violation of the UCC. Is that right?
Correct, Your Honor. And that's in the briefs, they were somewhat stated several ways because yes. They come into play on the counterclaims by the appellant, correct?
Okay. So if we're looking at the counterclaims, it's just whether summary was judgment was wrongly granted against the counterclaims. And then both of those sort of factual, or I guess, I don't know, the issues you described go to both of those questions.
Correct.
Whether there's a contract, whether there's a UCC violation. Okay, thank you. And then promissory estoppel sort of is its own thing, that third counterclaim.
Correct, okay. Your Honor. And so it seems to me that the authentication question is somewhat of a threshold issue. So I had intended to start with that, even though the scope issue was discussed first by Mr. Kramer. In this case, there is an authenticated agreement by Mr. Koenig. As was suggested by Judge Riley, the court has recognized what's known as the composite document rule in the cases cited in our brief. And here we do have a composite or composition of documents that do authorize the granting of a security interest in the trailer. And then therefore the filing of the UCC to perfect that security interest. I can go through the documents, which there are two credit applications that were signed by Mr. Koenig. Both of those agreements acknowledge or say that the applicant will be bound by the terms of the customer agreement. There is a subsequent application specifically for the express equipment loan that is at issue here. As noted, there were three loans taken out, two loans and one credit card that were at issue in the complaint, but it's really only the express equipment loan that's at issue on appeal. And that subsequent agreement again says that this offer is subject to the terms of the customer agreement and other documents that will be provided to the applicant. This again was signed by Mr. Koenig. The customer agreement is the document that actually sets forth the granting language, and that was discussed by Your Honors and Mr. Crema. So I won't read the specific language at this point, although I'll probably go back to it in more detail when I discuss scope. Admittedly, that document is not signed. However, there is a final document, which is the confirmation letter, which was sent to Mr. Koenig. He signed the FedEx package for the document and then also endorsed the check, which the check for the loan proceeds for the purchase of the trailer at issue. And the confirmation letter specifically says, your endorsement of the enclosed check will confirm that you have accepted the terms as well, the above terms, as well as the terms and conditions set forth in the Wells Fargo Equipment Express customer agreement. Again, the agreement that sets forth the granting language for the security interest in the trailer. Mr. Koenig did, in fact, endorse the check. So that's one more signature. Together, we have three signatures in the composition of these loan documents. And so it's our position that the district court was correct, that there is a properly authenticated agreement, which in turn gave Wells Fargo the authority to file its UCC financing statement to perfect its interest. Moving on then to scope, your honors are well aware of the issue and whether or not in the customer agreement that subpart four, which is the all rents, issues, income, profits, and proceeds, only applies if Mr. Koenig purchased a different trailer or a different piece of equipment than was described in the confirmation letter. It's our position that that's an illogical reading of the granting language, and that subpart four applies to, or the word foregoing in subpart four refers to all the foregoing subparts, including one, two, and three, one being the scenario that in fact played out in which Mr. Koenig purchased the trailer that was described in the confirmation letter. It seems to the issue that was raised at the district court is whether or not the additional language that then was set forth in the UCC financing statement, which said all proceeds of the foregoing, again, equipment, whether arising from the sale, lease, or use, or disposition thereof, exceeded the scope of what was just described, and whether exceeding that scope prevented him from getting additional financing. And one, I don't think it does exceed the scope. They both, although the language is not identical, both the customer agreement granting language and the financing statement that were filed refer to proceeds and profits. And Minnesota statute 336.9-305A2 says that a security interest attaches to identical proceeds of collateral. So whether or not the loan documents granted a security interest in proceeds, there's a statute that grants a security interest in proceeds. So again, I don't think that there isn't the financing statement exceeded the agreement, but even if it did, a creditor is allowed to attach to proceeds and collateral.
What does proceeds mean in that? Proceeds. What does proceeds mean in that statute? Proceeds if you sell the collateral, or proceeds if you use it and earn income?
I believe it refers to if you sell it, and not the more broad definition of use.
We'd still be left with the broader things that are claimed.
Correct.
Okay.
And I will note that both the customer agreement, it uses the word income and profits, which is the alternative definition of proceeds generated from a piece of equipment. So the customer agreement does refer to income and profits in addition to proceeds, and then as does the financing statement that was ultimately filed. So again, they both contemplate both types of proceeds. even if the statute just contemplates proceeds from a sale of a piece of collateral. Just to touch on the promissory estoppel argument, there is an agreement here. Promissory estoppel only applies if there's no written agreement or if the agreement is ambiguous, and it's our position that it's not. So promissory estoppel doesn't apply here. The agreement controls. Both on all issues, we would ask that your honors affirm the district court in its entirety. And I know I have more time, but I don't have anything further to add.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel. Counsel for the appellant, you'll have the last word, sir.
Thank you, Judge Connolly. I apologize to counsel if I'm putting words in her mouth. My penmanship is horrible, but what I thought I heard counsel say was in Romanet 4, the phrase foregoing refers to Romanets 1, 2, and 3. That's not a reading of the language that's accurate, because it's proceeds of the foregoing. So clearly what we're dealing with in sub Romanet 4 is proceeds of the foregoing equipment, because you cannot take rents and profits under the items identified in Romanet 1, 2, and 3, the foregoing has to only refer to the machinery or equipment. Judge Smith, you asked a very good question on proceeds. And if I believe your honor is correct, proceeds relates to the sale, rent relates to the use. So obviously, if the collateral was sold, the bank is entitled to a security interest in the proceeds. But in this case, they filed on the rents and incomes from use. And that is the genuine issue of material fact as to where the bank violated its contractual right and exceeded the scope of its loan documents in filing this UCC-1. I thank your honors and counsel for your time this morning.
Thank you, counsel. The matter is submitted. We will be issuing our decision within 90 days. That being our last oral argument, we are adjourned.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Can we take a 3-minute break?
Yeah. Fine with me. And then Tracy, could we do my case last, the Allstate one?
Sure.
Thanks.
Sure. Okay.